This is a flashback episode to last year when Grant and I talked about how to propagate your own trees, plants, and flowers for free and sell the extras as a side hustle. This will feed into the episode I have with Grant as it comes back on October 20th, and we talk about what we've learned in the last year. Enjoy. Welcome to Thrive in the Future podcast, positive solutions to help you thrive, designing your intentional life, homesteading, gardening, and rediscovering culture and tradition. Check out Thriving Food Forest Design. Let us create a low-maintenance perennial paradise for you so you can grow more food and be more sufficient. That's at thrivingfoodforest.com.
I was on the phone today with a guy who wanted me to help him start a plant nursery, essentially. He didn't really know what he wanted, but everything he said was the definition of a plant nursery.
Yep.
And I pretty much had to tell him I can't do it. That's something that me and my fiance are doing. And so, you know, I feel like he'd be 7 minutes away where we're moving on the farm. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I cannot use my interpretations of the nursery business and my interpretations of how to do it, lay it out, give it to you without any stake in your game, and then move 7 minutes down the road and start the same thing.
Right.
So I told him, I said, look, if you need any questions, I'll be more than happy to answer some basic questions. We'll keep in touch. We might do a venture further down in the future. But he has a neighbor who has a vineyard, and vineyards are exploding all over Georgia. And he said he needs a specific type of grape rootstock, but he can't get it because it comes from Italy. And he says there's not really any good growers here that do that. And he has to place an order for about 150. And I'm like, I told him that if he could give me his contact information or give him my contact information, that's something that I can do. And I can, if he can give me enough rootstock to go and start with, you know, next year I can maybe start getting that. Him as the vineyard owner would have in contacts with other vineyard owners to say, hey, this is where I get mine here in Georgia. I can always give him like a eternal discount if he keeps, you know, throwing that business my way and getting the word out that I can custom grow your rootstock as ordered.
Right. So yeah. Another thing to think about is that he does figure out how to do this nursery, right? And you're 7 minutes down the road. You're going to specialize in some stuff that he doesn't do. Like, you know, I've got the apple guy just down the road, but I don't do apples and he doesn't do nuts.
Yeah. So, for me, this is going to be more commercial. So it's going to be like your spring annuals, your vegetable plants. We're going to cover pretty much everything you can go and get at Lowe's, from shrubbery to trees to, you know, your perennial bulbs, everything. I even want to get into bulb production because there's not a lot of bulb producers in the United States. A lot of that comes from Holland and the Netherlands. And then the caladium bulbs come from Florida. So I know there are some restrictions on what I have, but you can always, you know, if you get enough crop, like I wholesale bought like 260 paper white bulbs. I planted them, fertilized them heavy. They ended up multiplying by four. Each one turned into four. So if I were to split those again, they're going to continue to grow out and multiply exponentially. Same thing with anything like amaryllis.
So can you take the bulbs and then split them?
Yes.
Oh, you can. Okay.
So I'd have, so those 200, like it's, and they're a narcissus. So that'd be 260 times four. Wow. So like amaryllis, I planted an amaryllis bulb that I got from my grandmother 3 years ago. And that one bulb is now 13. Mm-hmm. Now they're not all the same stage of maturity, but there's still one is now 13 over 3 years. That's almost 4 year if you keep it in good soil, good sun. And if it's in crappy soil, it's basically in our gravel driveway that we pushed the garden bed forward. We didn't get rid of the driveway. We just put stuff on top of it. So, you know, it's not in a great place, but, you know, Georgia is rich in minerals. We just don't have any topsoil. We're just clay. We're just 100% clay because all of our topsoil was eroded decades ago.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So you know, we still do fine, but there's just not enough organic material and organic matter in the soil to kind of get it going. So you can always, even if you're doing like a vegetable garden or a vegetable production, if you work, you know, mulch and leaves into the soil about 8 inches down, you'll start to build up, you know, you a good layer of topsoil that'll be nice, rich, and humus.
So you were talking about, you were getting cuttings. They were basically discard cuttings, like just trims off of plants from, you know, some local place like a Home Depot or something where, you know, one of your relatives works there, right? And you were taking them home and rooting them out. So how do you do that? What's your process for that? Do you just stick them into some soil and or do you do something special?
Rooting hormone is your best friend. Now, I didn't know this, but there are three strengths of rooting hormone.
Really?
I didn't know that. There's rooting hormone for hardwoods, softwoods, and then there's rooting hormone for like vegetative plants. So I didn't even know that until this past semester. We got a new teacher, and he gets much more in depth with, you know, the field.
Cool.
So I just get like a regular rooting hormone. Go crazy with numbers, because half of it will probably die. You always think you have too much. Don't do it. You probably have just enough. If you have more, that's great. You have more. So you always want to do too much, because you can always get your stuff together and make it happen. You can't really go back and fight the time if you didn't plan out to do enough.
Right. So you've taken the cuttings from the plants over there.
Mm-hmm.
You stick them in rooting hormone. You're sticking them in the ground. Are you watering them? Are you spraying them? What is the best way?
I keep them inside under grow lights. And it's in a nice good potting mixture, and then just kind of keep it moist. Don't keep it wet, but just kind of keep it moist. Make sure it doesn't dry out, and then just give it time, 3 weeks at least. Stuff like coleus, begonias, extremely easy to propagate. Lantana, easy to propagate. Celotia is easy to propagate. All these different things are kind of relatively easy to propagate. Like you could even take some of your, like you could take dahlias, you know, dahlias are a tuber in the ground. So you could take the vegetative part of the dahlia, cut it up, root it, and then it'll create new fresh tubers over time.
Wow. Yeah. I had a lady contact me on Facebook today, and she was saying, how do you do mulberry cuttings? So I said, well, I usually take them. I take the mulberry cutting and I do just like you said. And she was saying that she takes the mulberry and she sticks it in a pot of water and it starts sprouting. And I'm like, I've never seen that happen before.
Yeah.
Have you seen that?
You can root figs in water. You can probably root pomegranates in water. Mm-hmm. I accidentally rooted an American beautyberry. And I didn't even know what it was. It just started growing in the middle of one of my raised beds. And I'm like, this is a straight up plant. And I'm like, its leaves were different than a beautyberry. Then it started putting on fruit first year. I'm like, whoa, this is awesome. So
that's awesome.
And then I did the same thing with elderberry. I broke off a stick, shoved it in the ground, and it rooted by itself.
That's how I did it.
Just in my garden beds. Now, do you want to take more responsible cuttings? About 8 inches, 6 to 8 inches is good. Cut it at a 45 degree angle, scratch a little bit, dip it in your root hormone, put it in your dirt, keep it in a place where they won't freeze and gets plenty of light. Mulberry trees, I do say do the same thing, but most of these things, you could root it in water. You have a higher chance of it rotting if you don't change the water frequently enough. It's also, for me, that's just a hassle. It's like you have to go change the water when it's in this.
Sure.
You let it do its thing. You let it take its time, and it kind of gets rid of the chance of rotting. They could straight up die, but they wouldn't necessarily rot because you forgot to change the water.
Yep. Yeah, I do elderberry cuttings so I planted elderberries in an apple guild around an apple tree, and elderberries are outperforming the apple tree. So every year I have to go in heavily prune them back. So I just take the stick. I was putting them in a pot with rooting hormone, but then they weren't transplanting very well in like May and June. So I just take the stick, like you said, I just stick the stick in the ground and I've got elderberry all over the place now.
So if you want to look at it from a more, I would say, nursery perspective, is you'll want to root them, make sure they're fertilized. You need to make sure they have enough roots before you transplant them. You need to make sure they're very well established, they're healthy. And you might want to pot them up a time or two before you plant them in the ground, just to make sure they are strong enough to withstand that transplant shock.
Mm-hmm.
I took some figs to school fruit. They're about a three inch log, like width wise in diameter. That's a fig that I cut down from my fig tree. Cause it had some fig borers, and I ran into the bottom of it with a lawnmower and it started to rot. So I just cut it down. And so I've got about six, basically logs in a pot at school rooting. I did one and it rooted, and it's the fastest growing one there is, just because there's more energy that it can shoot out into root. They root faster, they grow faster.
What kind of figs are they?
I don't know. It's either a brown turkey fig, or another type of fig. It's more of a smaller fig. Not a great producer, but I figured for the heck of it, I'd just do it because it was such a girthy rooting.
Sure. How do you make figs? What do you use them for?
So you can eat them just as a fruit. Figs are inverted flowers. They're either self-pollinating or pollinated by a fig wasp. So they'll go inside the fig, pollinate it, and then die. And then the acid inside the flower dissolves it. You can use it.
Appetizing.
Yeah. I love them. I absolutely love figs. They are my absolute favorite fruit.
Really?
They're kind of creamy and milky. You don't really get that in anything else. But we just did 13 quart jars or 13 pint jars of fig preserves. You can use them as hors d'oeuvres, cut them in half, put them on a cracker with cream cheese. My teacher, he's 78. He's an upstate New Yorker. He said, take them, wrap them in bacon, cook them in the oven. Cook them in the oven. And he says, oh my gosh, he says they're the best thing. So I've got a handful that are waiting to ripe. As soon as those things ripen, I'm throwing them in the oven wrapped in bacon.
Let me know how that goes. That sounds awesome.
I will. It does. It sounds really good.
I bet you they're all candied. Like by the time you do that, they're.
Yeah.
Wow. That's great. Let's talk a little bit about some places you could sell. So I've sold on Facebook Marketplace, and then I set up a real quick website, grownuttrees.com. I've been selling quite a bit through there. And then eBay, I've sold a few through eBay. One of the things that have been bothering me about eBay lately is they freeze your money until the person receives it, which is, I don't know how long that's been going on, but I'm like, where's my money? I see the sale, but I didn't see anything come through from PayPal.
Yeah, eBay is a very buyer friendly site. So you can screw over the seller very easily by saying, I didn't get it, it didn't arrive, all those things. I wouldn't have thought to try to sell trees on eBay. That's pretty smart.
Oh yeah, they got lots of stuff on there like that. So and most of the chestnuts I could compete with on price. And this is where doing local is good, because then you're not competing on price. You're competing on it's local. But hey, I've got 50 bazillion chestnuts, so I put some out there and some sold. One of the things that's really funny is, so my chestnuts are from this tree down at the elementary school, right? They're Chinese chestnuts, they're hybrids, but I don't know how much they're hybrids. They're from the chestnut farm, the one that got frozen out. So that's where he got the original chestnuts, and he planted them in the ground, and then they took off. So I've got a bunch of people that are just wound around the axle, because they go, well, no, it can't be Chinese chestnuts. Well, how much are they hybridized? They got to have American in there. And I'm just like, look, I don't know. They're hybrid. The guy down there hybrids them a whole bunch. It's okay. And then everybody wants these Dunstan chestnuts. Have you seen those? Because I haven't seen
the Dunson, but a buddy of mine who's in forestry talks about Darling 51 chestnuts.
Yeah. So it's the same type of thing. So this dude, Dunston, like 75 years ago or something, found one tree that survived out of his whole orchard. One tree survived the blight. So then he either crossed it or he grafted it. And then eventually it was, once the patent ran out, then some nursery down there in North Carolina trademarked it. And now they're selling them. And I mean, they send them to Walmart and stuff. And people want line up. They tell you exactly when they're going to get to Walmart and all this stuff. They're pretty expensive, but they're sold TM and you can't sell them. Technically everybody does on eBay, but you're not supposed to sell them because they're trademarked or whatever. So, but I've had all kinds of people ask me for them. So I got some Dunston chestnuts from eBay, the actual seeds, and then I'll sprout those out and I'll say, look, you know, these are second generation Dunston. They're not really Dunstons. I'm not breaking your little trademark. So, you know, but they're going to be a little bit more truer to Dunston.
So plant patents are such a fun thing because that variety will be patented, but you'll have another company come out and then repatent like that same plant looks the same. They just give it a different name. Sure. But so Darling 58 is it's a blight tolerant chestnut tree. They inserted a gene from wheat into the chestnut, and it's like 99.99 chestnut, but that spliced wheat gene, and it which makes it almost completely immune to the blight.
We can't have any GMO chestnuts. Oh no.
I know, right? It's like it sounds
gene spliced chestnuts.
It sounds, but it's like, is that how bad is that? You know, was it a Roundup Ready wheat you know? Is it a Roundup Ready wheat chestnut scene? So you know,
that's funny.
Take it as you will, you know. I think that's honestly kind of really cool how they can do that. The science behind it is kind of awesome.
Yeah, definitely.
So,
yeah, I've noticed, like I said, that a lot of the nurseries are not doing fall plants. And the reason for that is because they haven't gone dormant yet. And they like to send bare root because then they don't have to send a pot.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of the nurseries now have moved away from doing the fall because then they'll just wait till they go dormant and then, or they'll take orders and then they'll do it later after they go dormant. But, you know, then they'll sell them bare root. And then they won't have to send a pot with, you know, soil in it, which is real heavy.
One thing you could always do is, you know, your shrubbery around your house, azaleas, clearia, camellia, your boxwoods, your ilexes, all the things like that. You can always take and root those. Yes, they could take up to 3 months before they put off their first root. And it also could take roughly, you know, 3 years for them to grow to size. But still, if you're wanting to become a nursery and you want that to be like your long-term goal, you need to think long-term in creating, you know, nursery products. So every year you can make 100 cuttings off of a boxwood. And so every year you just have, you know, another 100 cuttings coming in and doing their thing.
Yeah. That's cool. So what kind of timing are you looking at to get your nursery going? You got to get your land situation taken care of?
The property, we should hear back from the court about the middle of November. And as soon as we kind of get the okay, it's going through, me and my fiance are going to sit down, figure out what we're going to do, and then we're going to buy a 16-by-120-foot hoop house.
Oh, wow.
And so we're going to use it for vegetable crop, nursery production, you know, the whole thing. And then, it's going to be great. We're really getting close to that.
That's cool. I'm getting all excited again.
I know, me too. I'm like, I have a list of things to propagate. I want to propagate, you know, blueberries, elderberries, figs, beauty berries. I've got a whole list of things I want to get and propagate. You're like, you're making me want to do it so much faster. Blackberries, dahlias, you know, hibiscus, all the stuff I kind of have around the house. And it's like, you're giving me more work to do. Just getting so excited from it.
Yeah, definitely. Take care.
Thank you for listening to Thrive in the Future podcast. If you like what you hear, please click that like or subscribe button in your favorite podcast app. Follow us on Twitter @ThriveInTheFute and also go to thriveinthefuture.com.